Hello, and welcome to Articulated Thought. Today I have a kind of a special episode for you guys. It's a little bit long form, so this one will be about 30 minutes long. And it's someone who is very close to me interviewing me, as well as some discussion. And I found it pretty interesting, so I hope you guys enjoy.
Well, welcome to Quantum Conversations. My name is Grigori, and I'm delighted to be joined today by my guest and dear friend of many, many years, Colin.
Hello, how are you today?
Hey man, I'm doing really well. I'm glad to see your face, even though that'll be edited out of the last, you know, the final revision. So you're hailing out of Los Angeles, or the Valley, I should say, in California. And it's a pleasure to be able to do this with you at a distance these days.
Mm-hmm.
So we met, I don't know, almost a decade ago. Actually, I'm not even sure. Probably around a decade ago in Santa Monica as classmates, schoolmates. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's been quite a journey since then. And I'm really stoked these days, as Colin, I think from the various perspectives that we've been on in our evolutionary journey, you somehow managed to keep up to date with some pretty cutting edge healing technologies and approaches. And I think I've kind of stuck with a lot of the traditional ones, and I consider myself leading edge in some ways as a practitioner. And yet some of the things that we've been collectively discovering are just outright ahead of their time.
Amen.
I want to just thank you and your mom and your family and really just a lot of your tribe, so to speak, for taking me in.
Always. It's an honor to have you in my family.
So what are your main practices these days in terms of self-care and self-cultivation?
I'm going to reduce it down to a sentence and then I will explain. I would say my main practice is being present in every moment. And the way that I am currently practicing that is by one, using a timer, but more than a timer, it's actually the transitions that are the most important. And in the transitions of my life, and I'm going to use a couple different instances, when I get into my car, when I'm making coffee or food, when I'm sitting in an elevator, when I'm regardless, the moments of time that are like between a minute and 5 minutes, I find myself meditating in those moments. And on the Reddit boards, they call it microbursting. You can call it whatever you want. But to me, having those transitions be peaceful, it really allows me to see things more clearly when I'm practicing that time, because it allows me to be present in the moments that are not the transitions. And it's just like, it's breaking up your life a little bit more than people are used to, and just trying to give myself the space to be happy every single moment, because that's when things come to you, when you're happy. And so that's my main, those transitions are vital to me right now. Like, it keeps me centered. It keeps me keeping new tasks and new transitions to come up with. Like, I don't watch TV. I don't watch movies anymore. I'm just literally allowing myself to be present and learning as much as possible. So
I can definitely relate to that at certain parts of my life. I'm curious, what made you interested in trying this out, or what led you to discover it?
I would say, okay, to discover it, I'll answer that second. But what led me to this was that I was getting horrible panic attacks. If you don't know what a panic attack is, it's essentially a lack of breath. I don't know how to explain it other than that. Like, you're not breathing properly, and your muscles tense up really tight, and you kind of like go into a ball, and everything feels like catastrophic at that moment. And my therapist suggested among other people, suggested I needed to learn how to breathe better. And so these last 8 months, that's what I've been doing, is learning how to breathe, learning how to breathe, but also learning how to transition and learning how to implement being conscious about my breath in as many moments as possible. Obviously, there's some that you're just completely engulfed into whatever it is you're doing, but a lot of the time, the more conscious you are about your breath, the better you are going to do with that task.
That sounds like quite a struggle, but it also sounds like a relief and a resolution in a certain way that's probably really empowering for others. And have you been discussing this with other people and lending an ear for anyone that might be going through something that you might be real relate to?
Yes, I actually do a podcast, but in addition to that, a lot of people actually comment on how deeply I breathe. Like it's really strange, like dichotomy, since I've been doing this for the last 8 months. So many people have been like, you're breathing so deep. Are you okay? Like, are you exhausted? And I'm like, no, I'm intentionally doing this because this is how deep we should be breathing. I've actually discovered that it's the most ideal breath is 6 seconds in, 7 seconds out, 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out. Like you kind of get it to those deep, meaningful breaths. And then you're essentially meditating as you walk, as you strive, as you succeed or do whatever task you're doing.
That sounds like an intense training activity. The way I calculated it, it's about 5 breaths, 5 full cycles in a minute. I'd say that's, would you say that's more or less than people should be breathing or are used to breathing these days?
Used to breathing for sure. There's a reason for it actually. So I'll quickly tell you. So like over time we came in evolutionary time, our brains have become bigger. And as a side effect of that, there had to be a place where the brain was growing. And so the brain actually grew into our face and into our nasal cavities. And like essentially the reason that we snore and have kind of crooked teeth is because we have such big brains. And so in our modern times, our big-brained versions of ourselves have a harder time breathing because we didn't weren't able to adapt to the bigger brain. Like we didn't grow this way, we grow different ways, so that it actually not only physically is harder to breathe, but consciously we are more stressed than ever. Like in hunter-gatherer times, they were doing about 4 hours of work a day, and their work was like hunting or mashing almonds and nuts and stuff and making different kinds of meals. And that's 4 hours a day that they were working. That's all they had to do. The rest of the time they were being social with friends and stuff. And so they had a lot more time to think about breathing, if that even makes sense. We have a lot less time. People are working 12, 14 hour days. It doesn't make sense to be consciously breathing when all you're thinking about is returning phone calls or whatever.
Wow. I thought I had broached some of these subjects in some sort of deeper way than you pointed out a lot of different things to me and bridged a lot of the gaps, especially in terms of what a lot of us now tend to think about as how did our ancestors function and how did we survive for this long, and not only survive, but thrive and evolve as a species, maybe multiple species if you really boil it down to where we are now. And in those terms, I hear a lot about just dietary fads almost, I want to call them, you know, certain dietary, maybe lifestyle changes that people make. But in terms of breathing, I definitely hadn't considered, you know, something that has been left over or an artifact from our evolutionary roots. And so is there a formal movement that that discusses what our ancestors, like how they used to breathe?
So I derived that from the book Breathe by James Nestor. But in addition, I'm reading Sapiens by, I'm blanking on his name. I'll look it up right now.
So you all know Harari.
Yeah. And that book and the breath book is kind of where I'm coming from at this current moment. But I would say a lot of these practices are on Reddit too. I've learned a lot from different meditation boards, and just like how encumbered we are with things that we have in life and the responsibilities we have, just like make it so we don't have time to think about these things.
I'll say I can definitely confirm a lot of the things that we don't think about, or maybe that we don't quite get to think about, or don't give ourselves the permission or each other the permission to discuss. Like I've got clients and people that I meet and converse with a lot of times that will ask pretty specific questions with regard to respiratory conditions. And in some cases, I've been kind of told not to discuss certain conditions from perspectives that I may not be able to give medical advice. And of course, I don't think that I need to disclaim every single sentence, every statement with that none of this is medical advice, but I now realize that the liability that people are trying to avoid is actually from it seems like a commercial concept, but the medical industry has really copyrighted and patented some of their special diagnoses. And therefore it's difficult for us to bridge those gaps by discussing things like asthma or COPD from Eastern or energetic medicines, or with doing something with vitamins or supplements or diet, for instance. And in that way, I just wanna say, nothing I'm mentioning is medical advice. It's not legal advice or financial advice. I mean, I don't know how much clearer I can be with all these things. And I frankly don't care about the liability. I'm willing to accept full commercial and personal liability as best I can. I operate in a transparent way. And I believe that breathing is a human right. It is something that's essential, and we should be able to talk about it without worrying about copyright infringement or offending some regulatory board or commission, or I don't know who really cares about these things. But I want to just come back to this in terms of, someone had asked me today on a patching meeting first thing in the morning. Actually, someone you introduced me to, it puts on like a morning Zoom call every Tuesday morning, and it's a really great conference. You know, there are probably 30 people on this morning, and a couple of people have brought up the question of asthma or breathing in general. And I suppose the conversation is really quickly steered into, we cannot discuss anything in terms of medical diagnoses or medical treatment. So let's steer away from those. And if you can discuss symptoms only, then we can definitely talk about them. And that's kind of the disclaimer that we get a lot of the time. And it really kind of bums me out, but in a way I get now where it's coming from. I mean, there's literally a copyright issue.
Mm-hmm. My sister is a osteopath, and she, I can see that same fear in her. She has to be by the book, or she could get in trouble for not being by the book. Like, she has to support every diagnosis and everything. It cannot be woo-woo in any way. It has to be exactly what, like, here's a list of symptoms. Okay, it is this thing or this thing or this thing. It can be only those three things. It can't be anything else. And she has to do that. And she's afraid to do anything else because that's liability on her end.
Yeah, it's kind of a gift and a curse to have a framework and maybe insurance and some of these other, you know, licensing boards and whatnot that can, I suppose, help in certain situations. But how often do we rely on them when they're not actually helpful? I just don't even want to get into it. But to get back to the topic of using certain things like self-care and forms of therapy that we can apply at home, I wanted to make this podcast as a way to pandemic-proof a practice and pandemic-proof the lives and homes and sanctuaries. Everyone's home is becoming, for them, a wellness center. Some of these things that we traditionally do and have considered normal even in the recent past in terms of healing may not be safe or legal or comfortable in changing times. And I think that some of the things that we can do for ourselves are perfectly good solutions. And whether we meet with a practitioner every once in a while or have discussion via Zoom or on the internet, it's perfectly reasonable and viable to continue taking care of ourselves, and the world doesn't have to stop.
I have several practices that are, I don't know, a little out there, but are definitely have some scientific basis to them. The patches that Grigori was talking about are stem cell patches, and they, personally, I've taken them for, I mean, I've been wearing them for about 2 months, I want to say a little longer, and it's honestly changed my life, but I can't medically tell that to anyone. I can't be like, oh, you have these symptoms? Okay, yeah, like I can't, I'm not a doctor in any way, so, or a medical practitioner, but I can only say this is my experience. And the same thing with, I have a grounding mat that I use every single night, and it really centers me. It really, like, I feel it absorbing my day, essentially. And these things, I can't be like, that's gonna help you, but I can be like, that's what helps me, maybe you should try it.
It is definitely curious, like a certain vernacular that we have to tiptoe around in some cases, and I'm not upset about it, but I do think that people should be able to lay it on the table and not mince words in terms of there are certain ways that we can approach it. And the future, I think, really holds a lot of solutions. Like, for instance, the current billing, insurance billing and coding standard that we use, ICD-10 in the States, is way behind the rest of the world, where, for instance, in the ICD-11, the codes are included for Chinese medical diagnoses. So whereas we may not discuss it in these terms now, like I have to chart stuff for my school clinic in terms of Western medicine, even though we're not treating it. That's totally, like, to me, it's cognitive dissonance. Like to write down every single thing on the entire page is in terms of Chinese medicine, except for what we're gonna bill it as. And I think that is a big issue that we have.
It's true. We were like, essentially, they don't want to encourage people to be able to buy their own medicine from not a script, like not a pharmacy. They don't want people to be able to go to a tea shop or an herb shop and be able to fix themselves. That doesn't earn them any money. And so how much of this is actually like a, it's like voting with our dollar. Like we have this infrastructure in place because it earns the insurance companies and hospitals and doctors so much money. And that's sad. We should just have healing be the form of profit that we're looking after, not insurance money.
I think I get where you're coming from in the sense that the means should be the end in and of themselves, as opposed to something that's not equitable, like we have, that the bottom line is dollars, or milking the insurance industry in the way that it's set up. Yeah, it's kind of sad. On the other hand, I will say that it's so useful to have practitioners with good boundaries, with you know, good advice that you can count on them for, as opposed to self-medicating, because it is pretty dangerous, despite it being all natural and even organic and equitably sourced, whatever it is. Just there are certain teas, like I hear a lot turmeric these days, and turmeric is really great for some people for inflammation, but if your constitution's already hot, then it's a pretty hot herb and it's not helpful for a lot of people, especially on the daily. And that kind of thing happens a lot, I think, with not being able to listen to your body and just hearing, well, I heard that this is what people are using online, and I tried it for a few months and I didn't quite connect the dots. Like, I wasn't tracking it. I didn't, I've seen a lot of times people don't track it, and then if you reverse engineer it, like, oh shoot, this celery juice cleanse, or this high impact aerobic training or weightlifting routine, it was good for a little bit, but it's now taking its toll on me. And a lot of the mess we have to clean up from things like that, I suppose it's a good thing. It's like, it's a challenge. And some of the things that we make ourselves sick with, they're for our good. But I'll tell you, some of these triages that I've had to do, and some of the things that I'm really genuinely thankful for, some of the professionals that do clean up the mess.
Mm-hmm. Amen. No, I understand. Regulation is a two-sided sword. It cuts both ways. It's a very beneficial on one side, and also limits us in the other way. So I don't know. Where do you think the balance is? Where do you think? Yeah.
Well, to be honest with you, I think that largely a lot of this comes down to tradition and family values. And if in a certain family, or if your creed based on your religion or and where you come from relies heavily on using folk remedies, and it's really largely autonomous or self-reliant, or just simply taking some time for yourself. Like, that's one of the things that I notice is difficult these days for people. And I think a lot of us are re-examining this too, is when are we allowed to take some time for ourselves to be sick and don't need medical intervention? Because I see a lot of people rushing to get a test or a panel or whatever it is. And there's a reason that we don't test for absolutely everything. So we probably fall into more diagnoses and categories, everything under the sun, than is actually good for us if we're not debilitated long-term from some of these things that come around or natural processes of life. Like something that a friend of mine had taught me a decade ago, I found really, really changed my life, is that a natural part of our metabolic process in all mammals and probably other, and in reptiles for sure. I mean, organic life, as we know it, relies on the formation and dissipation of masses. That's something that's an intrinsic part of our body. It grows, it heals itself, it detoxifies itself, it purges some of the things that are byproducts of all that. And so rushing to get a cancer diagnosis, if you catch something, it may not be what we think it is, because we don't know that much in terms of oncology, or we don't know that much in terms of even what we think of as science these days. You know, what was fashionable last year may not be next year. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I think that over-regulating some of these things in terms of a Western medical diagnosis is pretty foolish. You know, it could save lives, but at the same time, we also agree, I want to say it's a scientific consensus, even though that's not a real term. There's never been a scientific consensus, at least in my opinion. Yeah. This is an ever-evolving discourse. And in terms of, we can definitely agree, I'd say society can, or should at least consider agreeing, that What we have in Western medicine and in Western society is largely iatrogenic illness and death. And that in seeing a doctor or getting certain medical interventions, I don't know, maybe some of these people would have died anyway, and mortality is fine. It's a proverbial ending as opposed to a natural transition to a greater part of eternity. But I do think that a lot of the illness we cause ourselves in partially reacting to something that may not be relevant.
So what do you feel like is the most relevant in your life?
I would say focusing on the wellness and the wholeness is most important, as opposed to focusing on disease and diagnosis. As so long as you're not debilitated long term, a lot of these things do not require immediate intervention, and they certainly don't require compulsory daily pharmaceutical drugs that don't really have a good way to get off of them. And that's kind of the bone that I have to pick these days, is that Western medical professionals are trained to prescribe drugs, but do not have the authority in most cases to take people off of drugs.
Wow.
It's actually illegal for a lot of them. It's a risk management issue for certain drugs. And I'd say that this is the majority of drugs. If they didn't give you a specific time period that you would be on them when you agree to it, chances are there was not a plan or an end game for them. It was more so switching to something else, or an adding something else to combat and ameliorate some of the side effects that come along with them. Because as you take things, especially long term, there will be side effects, because your body knows that it's not part of you. It's not, this is not your food. It's not your drug. It's not meant to be the rest of your life every day.
I found what you said really interesting about medical professionals searching for diseases. And I was reading a book on happiness, and it actually had proof that a lot of doctors and lawyers and people that fix problems are actually sadder or have a higher case of depression, because they essentially program themselves to always look for problems. And when you always search for problems, you are always, yes, you're always searching for solutions to those problems, but at the same time, searching for problems makes it so you can't see when things are just, I don't know, like at zero, or at, or like are negligible or whatever. It's like you have to find what the issue is. And that is something that I personally feel like we need to change in our medical field, even though like it works for a lot of things. But I know that like other like forms of Chinese medicine and stuff, like as you were saying, it's not really searching for the problem, but it's more like making the person whole. Finding what the issues are, but not searching for the problem.
I wonder how much of this really is a profit motive issue, because if it weren't profitable to find problems and create solutions for them, you know, there'd probably be a lot less reason to have repeat customers and repeat business. And also maybe not as many sales, even in the media, the way we see a lot now, things are blown out of proportion. And I'd say larger than necessary, we pay a lot more attention to things that are controversial as opposed to peaceful and enriching. So it's one of these, my favorite thing is like wholesome news. If there's any good news, feel free to send it my way.
That's it. I'm in the same boat. I have some subreddits that are just good news. That's the only news I listen to is good news.
It's hard to find these days, but I think, anyway, I don't want to get into that. Listen, man, I think this is, I don't know if we're gonna like call it, wrap it up with like a call to action. I'm gonna edit just a tiny bit of it down because I don't think that it needs to be more than like 15 minutes long or whatever. But would you like to do something like this if you're comfortable with this type of format as a podcast?
Yeah, like, no, I would love this. Yes.
Awesome. Well, I'm okay even just cutting it the way that it is because I don't really care about the final product, but I promise that we can get a little more organized for the future. It doesn't have to be totally off the cuff.
Yeah, no, this conversation has been actually enlightening to me and actually gave me a lot to think about and is probably going to be what my podcast is about tomorrow. So
sweet. Okay. Well, I can dig it, man. I'm really down. So I'm going to send you a copy of the final recording once it's ready. I don't know. I need to get some dinner. I didn't realize it was already 8 o'clock here, basically.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. But thank you so much. I'm going to stop the recording somehow.